Chapter 14. Everybody had turned up. Nobody had been killed, and they had all turned up the very next evening.
It's him!
Anyuta's breast resounded with the realization, and her heart leapt around like Lariosik's bird. Somebody was outside the Turbin's apartment, standing in the yard and knocking cautiously at the snow-covered window. Anyuta pressed her face to the window, trying to see who it was. Yes, it was him. Him, all right, but without his moustache. Smoothing back her dark hair with both hands, Anyuta opened the door leading onto the porch, and then from the porch into the snowy yard. And there he was, Mishlaevsky, unbelievably close to her. The student coat with the fur collar, the service cap, no moustache, it was true, but the eyes, even in the semi-gloom of the porch, were instantly recognizable. The right eye, glittering green like a precious stone from the Urals, and the left, dark. And he had grown smaller. With trembling hands, Anyuta unhooked the latch. The yard and the bands of light from the kitchen door disappeared from view as Anyuta became enveloped in Mishlaevsky's coat.
Hello, Anyutochka, whispered a voice that was so familiar. You'll get cold. Is there nobody in the kitchen?
No, no one,
Anyuta answered, not thinking what she was saying. She, too, was whispering for some reason.
He's kissing me. How sweet his lips have become, she thought in the seventh heaven of bliss. You mustn't, Viktor Viktorovich, she whispered. Put me down, Yelena.
Never mind about Yelena, the voice whispered reproachfully, smelling of tobacco and eau de cologne. Really, Anyutochka.
Put me down, Viktor Viktorovich, or I'll scream, I swear I will,
Anyuta said passionately, flinging her arms around Mishlaevsky's neck.
We've had a tragedy. Alexei Vasilievich has been wounded.
The python set her down instantly.
What do you mean, wounded? What about Nikol?
Nikol's fine, but Alexei Vasilievich has been wounded.
A patch of light from the kitchen door. When Yelena saw Mishlaevsky from the dining room, she burst into tears and said,
Vitka, you're alive, thank God, but we've...
She started sobbing and pointed towards Alexei's door.
He's got a temperature of 40. He's very badly wounded.
Holy Mother of God, Mishlaevsky said, pushing his cap to the back of his head. How on earth did he manage to get here?
He turned to the figure by the table, bent over a bottle and some shiny boxes.
Are you a doctor, may I ask?
Sadly, no, answered a faint, sad voice. I'm not a doctor. Permit me to introduce myself. Larion Surzhansky.
The sitting room. The door into the hall was shut, and the heavy drape over the door closed, so that the sound of voices would not disturb Alexei. Three people had just left his bedroom and driven away. The man with a pointed beard and wearing gold pince-nez, a second man, young and clean-shaven, and finally a third man, grey-haired, elderly and wise, in a heavy fur coat and a boyar's cap, a professor, Alexei's one-time teacher. Yelena had shown them to the door, her face set in stone. Everybody had been talking about the possibility of typhus, and now it was definite.
It's not just the wound. It's typhus as well.
And the thermometer stood at 40. And then this Yulia all the time. Feverish heat in the bedroom. Silence, interrupted by delirious muttering about some steps and the ring of a doorbell.
How do you do, kind sir? Mishlaevsky whispered venomously in Ukrainian, placing his feet wide apart.
Shervinsky turned beetroot red and looked away. His black suit fitted him irreproachably. Starched white shirt, bow tie, and patent leather boots. The papers in his pocket identified him as an artiste, Kramskoy Opera Studio.
Where are your epaulets? Why aren't you wearing them? Continued Mishlaevsky. Russian flags are flying on Vladimirskaya Street. There are two divisions of Senegalese troops in the port of Odessa, and there are Serbian billet officers in the city. Officers, go to the Ukraine and form your units, etc., etc. Why, you absolute...
Stop going on at me, Shervinsky protested. It's not my fault, is it? What have I got to do with it?
I nearly got killed myself. I was the last to leave headquarters at midday precisely, when the first enemy units appeared in the city from Pyachersk.
Yes, you're such a hero, said Myshlaevsky. But I trust that His Excellency the Commander-in-Chief managed to leave earlier, just like His Highness the Hetman, God damn him to hell. I do so hope he's now somewhere safe. The motherland needs people like him.
By the way, could you tell me perhaps their precise whereabouts?
Why do you want to know? What's it to you?
I'll tell you why. Myshlaevsky made a fist with his right hand and struck the palm of his left hand. If I were to come across His Excellency and His Highness, I would grab one by the left leg and the other by the right, turn them upside down and bang their heads on the road until I got tired of it. And as for you and the rest of your headquarters gang, you should be drowned in a latrine.
Shervinsky turned crimson.
Hold on a minute, if you please, he said. Calm down. Don't forget that the Prince also left staff officers in the lurch. Two of his adjutants went with him, but the others he simply abandoned to their fates.
Do you know that at this moment there are thousands of our troops sitting waiting in the museum, starving, with machine guns? Petliura's men will crush them like bedbugs, no doubt about it. Do you know how Colonel Nye was killed? He was the only one—
Just leave me alone, please, Shervinsky shouted, really angry now. How dare you talk to me like that? I'm an officer too, just like you, you know.
Gentlemen, please, intervened Karas between the two of them. This is a completely pointless conversation. And why are you going on at him like that? Leave it. It's not getting anyone anywhere.
Shh, be quiet, Nikolka whispered dejectedly. He'll hear us.
Embarrassed, Myshlaevsky calmed down.
All right, take it easy, Mr. Baritone. I was simply, you know.
It's still a bit strange.
Gentlemen, please be quiet,
Nikolka said, suddenly alerted to something, and stamped on the floor. Everyone started listening. Voices could be heard coming up from Vasilisa's apartment below them. They could dimly hear Vasilisa burst out laughing about something, a little hysterically it seemed. Vanda shouted something in reply. She sounded elated. Then everything went quiet for a bit. Then the distant voices started up again.
Well, what a surprise, Nikolka said thoughtfully. Vasilisa's got guests. Guests at a time like this. Absolutely earth-shattering.
Yes, he's definitely a character, your Vasilisa, agreed Myshlaevsky.
It was around midnight when Alexei eventually went to sleep, following his morphine injection. Yelena settled down in the chair by his bed. Meanwhile, in the sitting room, the others were holding a council of war. It was decided that everybody should stay there for the night. Firstly, it was the middle of the night, and there would be no point in going anywhere, even if they did have valid papers. Secondly, it would be better for Yelena, because they would be there to help. And then, perhaps most importantly, it was better at such a time to be visiting rather than sitting at home. But perhaps even more importantly, there was nothing they could do. And moreover, if they stayed here, they could have a game of Vint.
Do you play?
Myshlaevsky asked Lariosik. Lariosik blushed and became flustered. Then everything came out in a rush to the effect that yes, he did play Vint, but only very, very badly. Just so long as people didn't swear at him, as the tax inspectors had done in Zhytomyr. That he'd been through such a difficult time, but that here, at Yelena Vasilievna's, he was really coming to life, as Yelena Vasilievna was such an exceptional person, and it was such a warm and cozy apartment, especially the cream-coloured curtains on every window, thanks to which he felt protected from the world outside, and this world outside, as you had to agree, was dirty, bloody, and senseless.
May I ask whether you write poetry?
Myshlaevsky inquired, looking intently at Lariosik.
I do,
Lariosik replied modestly, blushing.
I see. Forgive me for interrupting you. Senseless, you were saying. Please go on.
Yes, senseless, and our wounded psyches look for peace precisely behind such cream-coloured curtains.
You know, insofar as peace is concerned, I don't know about Zhytomyr, but here in the city, you probably won't find it. By the way, you'd better wet your whistle. You'll get very dry otherwise. Do we have any candles? Brilliant. We'll put you down as dummy in that case.
When there are five people playing, it gets pretty dull.
Nikolka plays like a dummy anyway, interposed Karas.
Do you mind, Fedya?
Who lost hands down last time? You were the one who revoked. Stop flinging mud about like that.
But these cards are speckled blue, like Petliura's caps.
Yes, you're right when you say people really should live behind cream curtains. Poets always get laughed at for some reason.
God forbid. Why did you take my question the wrong way? I have nothing against poets,
although it's true I don't read any poetry. Or anything else, apart from artillery manuals and the first 15 pages of Roman law. When war breaks out on page 16, he stops reading.
That's a lie. You're not listening to me.
What's your first name and patronymic?
Larion Ivanovich?
Lariosik explained that his name was Larion Larionovich, adding what pleasant company he was in, except that company wasn't really the right word. It was more like a friendly family, and that he would be very pleased if people simply called him Larion, without any patronymic, unless, of course, anyone had any objection.
He seems a nice chap,
Karas whispered quietly to Shevinsky. Well, let's get going then. But why? He's lying, if you really want to know. I have read War and Peace. Now there's a book for you. I read it all the way through and really enjoyed it. And why? Because it was written not by some half-wit, but by an artillery officer. Do you have a 10? You're with me then. Karas is with Shevinsky. Nikolka, sit this one out.
But please, for God's sake, don't swear at me, Lariosik begged nervously.
Really, please, what do you take us for? A bunch of savages? I see what you mean about those awful Zhytomyr tax inspectors. They've really put the fear of God into you. We play strictly according to the rules here.
Absolutely. No need to worry at all, said Shevinsky, taking his seat.
Two spades. Yes, he was some writer, that lieutenant of artillery, Count Lev Nikolaevich Tolstoy. Shame he left the army. Pass. He would have made general. Owned an estate, of course. You can write a novel out of sheer boredom. Nothing to do in the winter. Quite simple when you have a country estate. No trumps.
Three diamonds, Lariosik said timidly.
Pass,
replied Karas. What are you on about? You play a really good game. You should be complimented, not sworn at. Right then, if you're saying three diamonds, I'll say four spades. I wouldn't object to the idea of going off to my country estate right now.
Four diamonds, Nikolka prompted Lariosik, glancing at his cards.
Four? Pass.
Pass.
In the flickering wax candlelight and surrounded by clouds of cigarette smoke, the nervous Lariosik bought more cards. Mishlaevsky dealt everyone a card each, tossing them out of his hands like spent cartridges from a rifle.
A low spade, he announced.
Well done,
he said encouragingly to Lariosik.
The cards flew out of Mishlaevsky's hands soundlessly, like maple leaves. Shervinsky laid his cards down neatly, while Karas threw his down fiercely. He wasn't having much luck. Lariosik laid his down calmly, each one accompanied by a sigh, as if establishing his identity.
Aha! King on queen, so that's what you're up to, is it? Said Karas.
Mishlaevsky suddenly turned purple and hurled his cards down on the table, looking daggers at Lariosik.
Why the hell did you have to go and trump my queen, Larion?
That's great,
Karas laughed gleefully.
One down!
Uproar broke out around the green baize table, setting the candles flickering. Nikolka started gesturing and shushing everyone, and dashed to close the door and pull the curtains.
I thought Fyodor Nikolaevich had the king,
Lariosik tried to explain, mortified.
How on earth could you think that?
Said Mishlaevsky. In his efforts not to shout, he started hissing instead, making his voice sound even more threatening.
You bought the king yourself, and then passed it on to me, hadn't you? Eh? What a...
Mishlaevsky looked round at everyone.
Well, I don't know. He says he wants peace and quiet, does he? That's a funny way to go about it, by trumping your own partner. It's a game of skill. It's not like poetry. You have to use your brains.
Wait a moment. Maybe Karas...
What do you mean, maybe? Maybe nothing. It was just stupidity. Forgive me, old man, people in Zhytomyr might play like that, but this is something else entirely. Don't take it out on me. Pushkin and Lomonosov might have written poetry, but they'd never have done anything as stupid as that. Neither would Nadsen, for that matter.
Calm down, leave him alone. It could happen to anybody.
I knew this would happen, Lariosik muttered. I'm such an unlucky man.
Shh, listen.
The room suddenly became quiet. In the distance, many doors away, a bell rang in the kitchen. Then they heard the sound of footsteps and doors opening, and Anyuta appeared. Yelena's head disappeared into the hallway. Myshlaevsky drummed his fingers on the tablecloth and said,
"Seems a little early, doesn't it?"
"Yes, it does," replied Nikolka, considering himself to be a leading expert on the question of house-to-house searches.
"Shall I answer it?"
Anyuta inquired anxiously.
"No, Anna Timofeyevna," Myshlaevsky answered. "Wait a moment."
He got up from his chair with a grunt.
"Don't bother. I'll go and do the answering."
"I'll go with you," said Karas.
"All right," Myshlaevsky said, and his face immediately took on the expression of a commander addressing his platoon. "I assume everything's all right through there. The doctor has typhus, etc., etc. You, Lena, are the nurse. Karas, you're the doctor. No, a medical student. Quickly, into the bedroom. Have a syringe ready or something. We're quite a crowd. Well, perhaps it won't matter."
The bell rang again impatiently. Anyuta gave a start, and they all looked even graver.
"Plenty of time," said Myshlaevsky, producing from his trouser pocket a small black revolver that looked like a child's toy.
"That's not necessary, surely," said Chavinsky with a frown. "I'm astonished at you. You might have been a bit more careful. What, you mean you walked through the streets with that in your pocket?"
"Stop worrying," Myshlaevsky answered politely and seriously. "It will be all right.
Here, Nikolka, you take it. Go and stand by the back door or by the window. If it should turn out to be Petlura's merry men, I'll cough and you can ditch it outside. But make sure we'll be able to find it later. It's an expensive piece, and I've had it with me ever since Warsaw. Everything okay with you?"
"Absolutely fine," said the specialist Nikolka, sternly and proudly, taking possession of the revolver.
"Right then," said Myshlaevsky, jabbing his finger in Shavinsky's chest. "You, Mr. Baritone, are just a visitor."
Then, turning to Karas with the same gesture, "Karas, you're a medical student." Then to Nikolka, "You're the sick man's brother." And finally to Lariosik, "Student lodger. Do you have some identification with you?"
"I have a Tsarist passport and my Kharkov University student card," said Lariosik, his face growing pale.
"Hide the passport and show them the university card."
Lariosik grabbed hold of the curtain over the door and ran off.
"All the rest is just rubbish. The women won't matter," went on Myshlaevsky. "Right, does everyone have their papers? Anything in your pockets that shouldn't be there? Hey, Larion, someone ask him if he has a gun or anything."
"Hey, Larion," shouted Nikolka from the dining room, "do you have a gun?"
"Of course not. God forbid,"
came Larion's shouted response. The doorbell rang again, persistently, and even more impatiently. It went on for a long time.
"Well, may God be with us," said Myshlaevsky, moving towards the door.
Karas disappeared into Alexei's bedroom.
"They've set out a game of patience," Shavinsky said, and blew out the candles.
Three doors led into the Turbin's apartment. The first was from the hallway onto the staircase. The second was a glass door marking the limit of the Turbin property. Beyond this door, there was a cold, dark passageway leading to the door to the Lisovich's apartment on one side and ending with the final door giving out onto the street. There was the sound of doors banging and Myshlaevsky's voice shouting down below,
"Who is it?"
Behind him on the stairs, he sensed the presence of the others listening. On the other side of the door, a muffled voice said plaintively,
"I've been ringing and ringing. I have a telegram here for a Talberg Turbin. Open the door."
"Well, maybe, maybe not."
The thought flitted through Myshlaevsky's head, and he gave a sickly cough. One of the figures on the staircase disappeared. Myshlaevsky cautiously pulled open the bolt, turned the key, and opened the door, leaving it on the chain.
"Give me the telegram,"
he said, standing sideways to the door so that it shielded him from whoever was outside. A hand in a grey coat thrust a small envelope round the door. The astonished Myshlaevsky saw that it really was a telegram.
"I need a signature,"
the voice behind the door said curtly. Myshlaevsky gave a quick glance outside and saw that there was only one person there.
"Anyuta! Anyuta!"
he called out cheerfully, miraculously recovering from his bronchitis.
"Can you get me a pencil?"
But instead of Anyuta, it was Karas who came running down the stairs with a pencil. Myshlaevsky scrawled the word "tour" on a scrap of paper torn from the envelope and whispered to Karas,
Give me 25.
Sound of the door slamming shut, followed by the key being turned. Puzzled by all this, Myslavsky and Karas went back upstairs. Everyone gathered round while Yelena opened the square envelope and started to read out the telegram in a matter-of-fact tone. Lariosik hit by terrible misfortune, stop. Opera artiste Lipsky.
Oh my God! Shouted Lariosik, his face the color of beetroot. It's from her!
63 words, gasped Karas. Look, it's covered all over in writing.
Oh, Lord, Yelena groaned. What have I done? Please forgive me, Larion, for reading that out. I had completely forgotten about her.
What happened? Asked Myslavsky.
His wife's left him, Nikolka whispered in his ear. A real scandal.
Suddenly, the whole apartment resounded with a terrible hammering on the glass door, as if they had been hit by a landslide. Anyuta screamed, and Yelena turned pale, leaning back against the wall. The hammering was so monstrously, ridiculously loud that even Myslavsky's face changed color. Shervinsky, who had also turned pale, clutched at Yelena. A groan came from Alexei's bedroom.
The doors!
Yelena shouted. Forgetting about any strategic plan, Myslavsky, followed by Karas, Shervinsky, and the deathly pale Lariosik, dashed down the stairs.
It's something worse this time, muttered Myslavsky.
They suddenly saw a single black figure silhouetted behind the glass door. The hammering abruptly ceased.
Who's there?
Myslavsky bawled at the top of his voice, as if they were in a cavernous weapons store.
For the love of God! For the love of God, open the door! It's me, Lisovich!
Screamed the figure.
It's Lisovich!
Vasilisa looked terrible. The hairs around his gleaming pink bald patch were all standing on end. His tie was hanging to one side, and his jacket tails were flapping about like the doors of a ransacked cupboard. His eyes had a dulled, crazed expression, as if he'd been poisoned. Standing on the top step, he suddenly swayed and collapsed onto Myslavsky. Myslavsky grabbed hold of him, barely able to stop him falling. Then he himself sat down on the stairs, shouting out in a hoarse, distraught voice,
Karas! Water!